Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Nasdaq Dorsey Wright podcast for the week ending on April 22nd. My name is Ian Saunders, and joining us here today is Steve Raymond. Steve, it's been nice to get back in the office over the course of the past couple of weeks. We're finally able to do these podcasts face to face, and hopefully been a little bit easier conversation there sitting across the table from one another.
That's right. And it's been quite a while since, you know, we've been in the media room and been personal. We've had some great content. In the COVID time frame, even though we weren't able to be together, but we've had some great contents and good interactions in the past. So, yeah, it's good to be back and get involved in this format.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we're coming in here with movement at the time of this recording, it's Thursday afternoon. Podcast is going to be coming out there on Friday morning. But we've seen some interesting movement over the course of the past couple of weeks. I mean, specifically looking at the S&P 500 index. I mean, you look at that 20-point chart and big sell-off throughout the first 3 months of the year. A rebound as we headed there toward the end of March. I mean, we got that 20-point chart, did break a double top or triple top, move back to a positive trend before topping out at chart level 4620 with movement right there toward the end of March. And then we head into April and we get three consecutive sell signals. 20-point chart turns back around, three consecutive sells, bottoms out at that 4380 level and touches that longer-term, that bullish support line, that positive trend line that we see there on that 20-point chart. But that trend line held at this time, and we've seen movement over the course of the past week or so. I mean, rebound back to the upside. We got the chart to return back to a buy signal at 44.80, and it's now creeping back up. And with movement, at least this morning, Thursday morning, got back up to that 4,500 level before pulling back a little bit in the afternoon. So, I mean, Steve, it's good to see it pulling back. You got a sharp rally there toward the end of the first quarter. You would expect a little bit of some normalization after such a sharp rally like that.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, 2022 is about, kind of absorbing different moves we have. But let me make a point or two on a point or two that you made, which was, you know, as the S&P is hitting its what we call absolute trend line, price trend line, the scores of the S&P group are hitting that upper trend line too. So they're following a trend as well. But I think the key to why we're, you know, pretty impressed with the S&P 500, otherwise known as the core, is the percentile rank of its strength against other asset classes around the world is in the 90th percentile. So along the way of some of these corrections, which have been devastating for some asset classes, the S&P has really held in there just absolutely in excellent strength-wise. But certainly, you know, flutters the heart as it moves around. So I think that these patterns of holding trend and holding certain score thresholds kind of add up to be the same thing, which is the core still in good shape. And that's what's, you know, holding, no pun intended, the market together, meaning the core of the market holds the rest of the global markets, together to be functional. And that's what we've been seeing, since November, December, and the course of, you know, these months in 2022.
Yeah.
So we do expect good things, right? You know, right up until it's not good. But so far, the percentile ranks of the S&P are holding, the trend lines, and then, of course, the scores are holding. So, you know, if we want to prognosticate, which we try not to do, we would say that we're still in pretty good shape here.
Yeah. I mean, you can see, like you're talking about there, I mean, that U.S. equity 4% rank up north of 90%. We did see money market percent rank, that kind of cash proxy ranking on that group scores page. It's going to say, okay, how high does cash rank relative to the 135 plus other areas that we're looking at, right? And I mean, climbing north of 50% is typically not a good sign for the broader state of markets. But there's definitely a fair amount of areas that are holding above that level, at least certainly on the domestic equity side. There are some areas moving below it too. I mean, I think we continue to talk about that size and style breakdown. I mean, the value growth dynamic. Do you want to be in large caps? Do you want to be in small caps? I mean, what that value growth relationship has continued to change over the course of the past 18 months. I mean, looking at that U.S. styles ranking on the group scores page, I think presents a pretty interesting picture there. I mean, we've been talking a lot about the S&P. People talk a lot about small caps. Is it time for small caps to be in favor? But I mean, mid caps. I mean, you look at that size and style breakdown, and you got mid cap value sitting up at the top of that ranking is the only size and style break group with the score north of that blue sky zone, right? And you got Midcap Growth, on the other hand, all the way down to the other end, the only size and style relationship with the score south of 2.5 in that kind of red zone. So that definitely presents a pretty interesting picture in accessing an area of the market that's, I mean, goes oftentimes kind of undiscussed with a lot of your financial media.
Yeah. You raised several points there. I'll be brief and say, often there's always a bear market somewhere. So in the exchange of the core of the market doing well, not every asset class is doing as well. In fact, we have numbers like 50% of the asset classes out there are in some sort of stress. And quite frankly, we're in a unique historical point in time where we've never really had a dominant core market where the fixed income have all collapsed to be below the score of 250 and below the score of money market as well. So that's what's pumping up those money market percentile ranks. And so you could say, half of what I might look at is in distress, but the other half, there's a lot of, good action or opportunity there. It's been, as I'm recalling, somewhere around 2008, 9, and 10, that mid value has as a collection been this strong. We think it's going to get stronger. That's kind of the implied score directional and score path or the score movement. And it's been a long time. See, so one of the things as the investor, as the advisor, that you want to keep in mind is that you really haven't seen markets like this in 12 years. So as we've been saying in the report, we've been saying in different media over some many weeks and many months, is you kind of have to dust off some history. You kind of have to go back and say, look, things may operate a little bit differently as far as the asset classes that you remember from a few years back or 5 years back. We might be in a new paradigm, which is what we've been saying. And mid-value is part of that. In fact, it's actually, it's hard to get a style box to go to the top of the style boxes.
Yeah.
And the reason is because we measure every mutual fund in the space and every ETF in the space, which implies every index in the space. And so you really have to have a concerted effort of asset preference, meaning by investors and what drives the market, to really push these things to get to the top. And we just saw the mid value really get there. And of course, it's a broad asset class with sector breakdowns, which we may discuss in a moment. But it just doesn't get there by one sector.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thematic thing. And I think that, we need to keep an eye, and the investor, the advisor needs to keep an eye on this, what we call quote unquote value market. Value has the momentum. So if you say, well, I do momentum, well, in this context, you've got a lot of value because that's where the momentum is. So just to be clear, and we've got to continue to track that to make sure the value holds its momentum. The counterpart to that, it's been the case, and of course been the case up to last night, that the counterpart groups, meaning the growth groups, have really suffered. So mid value, getting to historic 12-year levels of strength, and mid growth doing the opposite, for several years, really pounding down through the southern tip of that. I'll make just a quick comment is there is a diagonal relationship between the asset classes over history. The most notable one is between large growth and small value. Typically, both of those don't lead at the same time. And when small value's doing very well, large growth is not. And mid value, mid growth can have some of that diagonal paradigm as well. So this is not unusual. We do expect the value and the growth paradigm to go to battle once in a while. And generally over the last, you could say decade, we've enjoyed a great growth leadership. And now you would say that, it's been challenged. It was challenged a little bit in 2021, but this is a big challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
So, would you say that in looking, I mean, we a lot of times conversations focus around the large and the small, right? I mean, seeing mid-cap follow through, I mean, is that just indicative of broader follow through for that kind of value versus growth paradigm, or is that, how would you kind of view that there?
Well, like I said, we don't see it that often. So, right. You know, in the last 22 years, you know, you've seen mid value really, you know, shine, you know, less than a handful of times. And here's one. The prior one was 12 years ago, and then certain spots in the early part of the 2000s. So, yeah, it is a breadth there. I will also mention that mid value as a classification often houses sub funds and assets that go like this, you know, real estate, you know, utilities, financials, energy, commodities. So what goes on in mid value is, you know, when it's asleep, it's really asleep. But when it wakes up, I mean, you have these components underneath. And you know, we could talk more about the financial, the commodity, and the energy point of view here, but that's really driving part of this, no doubt about that. And quite frankly, you know, the idea is that they look like they're going to be getting stronger.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Rather than the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a pretty, and you bring it up kind of 10 to 12 years ago time frame. I mean, you looking back then was the last time we saw mid value kind of north of that 4.0 right. score threshold. But the interest, I mean, you still had mid cap growth also up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tailing right along with it throughout that time frame. You look at the score history of those two groups throughout most of the time since the great financial crisis. I mean, you've had those groups pretty close, not spot on. Sometimes they've been really close, but I mean, pretty close throughout the bulk of that time, really up until mid 2017. And then you started to see that separation favored growth throughout much of the past, this 3 to 4 years kind of leading up until the past, it's six to 12 months, and favored growth throughout the majority of that time. You had very low score positions at some points, especially March of 2020 for mid-cap value. And since that time, really mid-cap value just continued to creep higher. It got real close to that 4.0 score threshold at the kind of earlier part of 2021. Fell back a little bit, but remained north of that 3.5 zone, and now is rebounded right back up to where we saw it there.
Yeah. You know, markets are like snowflakes. We'll have different interactions with this, you know, basically, you know, coming out of a washout, both these groups or many groups can track into a stronger relative strength portion, which they absolutely did do in the COVID. Everybody, you know, is low, everybody comes up. But I think that the idea that we're in I would phrase it as a positive core market, meaning we're not in a bear market in the core stocks, you know, in a positive, bullish core market, it's rare to see a mid value be also a leader. So I think this is kind of one of those, mixes, a value heavy mix with, commodities and energy and leadership, which makes it unique in this decade, no doubt about it. Now, if you go back and one were to speak of prior decades, like the 70s and the 80s, some reference the 60s and 50s, I mean, you know, this has happened before, and the 70s would be a notable one. And that's why we have to want to keep an eye on this, because what happens when these asset classes we're talking about, the value growth paradigm, or more acutely, the mid-value, mid-growth, or the large value or large growth, small value. When these paradigms get challenged and change, it changes the asset allocation you're supposed to do. See, it's interesting to say all things are changing, but the rubber meets the road is, oh no, your underlying holdings that you're supposed to manage, that they're changing or you need to change them. So there is a lot of activity. And I would say a pain to go through to, you know, keep up with the activity as the trend matures, to make sure that we're in the leaders. You know, remember that a leader you may have had is now no longer a leader, but if you still have it, then you're in the laggards. And so it's this transition to say, you know, and sometimes I quote this way, I prefer the market doesn't change. But if it does, right, then you need to change your underlying holdings.
Right. Got to be ready for it.
Yeah, got to be ready.
Yeah, and I mean, I think those underlying holdings, like you talked about, just looking at some of those mid-cap value and mid-cap growth funds. I mean, you look, I mean, Vanguard is some of the largest on the ETF side from those size and style boxes. When you look at the Vanguard mid-cap value ETF, ticker VOE, for those following along there on the platform, you compare that against the Vanguard mid-cap growth, ticker VOT. I mean, those are looking at, like you said, pretty diverse holdings from a sector perspective for the value side. I mean, you got almost 17% in financials, 16% in consumer cyclicals, low of 12% utilities, 11% in real estate. And then you flip to the growth side and you're looking at 31% in technology and 23% in industrials. I mean, just so heavily weighted towards just two areas of the market that, right. And technology in particular has been an area that struggled, certainly from a score perspective over the course of the past several months.
Yeah. And likely could continue to do so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes growth is about focus. Like back in the old days where there were no ETFs, but you did have fund companies that did apply the growth schematic, Putnam, Janus, others come to mind. Same thing is on the growth side, they would really focus on a sector or two. And not only that, they would focus on the holdings. So this is the version of low headcount. Like we only own 20 stocks or we only own 40. So growth does have a focus bent to it, whereas the value camp tends to have many sectors in value and their holdings, their headcount of the holdings of the internal funds tends to be larger anyway. So again, I think that the fact that the mid-value group reached a pinnacle this week speaks to the breadth that many sectors are at work. Many underlying holdings are at work. And it's not an easy task for value to outperform growth. Something has to be, you know, underneath the surface that's a big disparity there, which is what we're describing and have described, you know, since the latter part of 2021. But you could say it's not, you know, like many might say precious metals belongs in mid-value. I agree with that. Many say that a particular, you know, oil or gas or commodity, you know, belongs. I agree with that. But what these moves we're seeing are much more than that, much broader than a hot energy fund or a hot precious metals fund. I mean, there's a bigger, broader thing going on here to drive these asset classes into the relationship that we see them now. So keep that in mind, is that, yes, you do want to use Vanguard and all the other wonderful ETF or mutual fund providers that you have exposure to. And then keep in mind that we want to overweight the value. But also keep in mind is that the lower the score of the group that you're participating or want to participate in is, you can still apply good fund selection. In other words, you got a low group score, you can still go in there and find the better of the low group scores and keep an eye on it, mm-hmm. you know, as these things, you know, transide. In the 70s, for example, this paradigm of value and commodities on top and, you know, some great distress in some of these growth groups, you know, happened several spots through the 70s. Probably one of the longer durations was 3.5 to 4 years. So if one were to say, well, we're in 3 months of it, well, it could be that this carries on a little bit. We're not saying that it will. We're saying you have to be prepared mm-hmm. that you know, maybe this doesn't go away. So what we do at Dorsey Wright is advocate that we go with what is. So monthly, quarterly are good rhythms. And so what one would say is, well, as we go through the months, month by month, quarter by quarter, we go with what is. When it changes, we change, so that we're fresh on top of, you know, where this market may, you know, internally go next. So officially, the core of the market has been about the same position it was all last year. It's underneath the market that we move from a value, you know, growth to value paradigm. There was a head fake in there, and then we made a more substantial move now. And then this is where we are. So we've got a, you know, the market at the same spot, and then underneath the market, things change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, things are going to continue to change, right? I mean, we've seen a lot of volatility this year, a lot of volatility the past 18 months, and a lot of stuff moving around. But these are definitely some important points to kind of keep an eye out for out there for. Like you said, I mean, just because it hasn't been this way for a prolonged period of time and several years doesn't mean it can't for several more years down the road.
Yeah, it draws to mind. I mean, there was a spot, I can't name the year, that the large growth super index called the, you know, the NASDAQ 100, the Qs, was out of favor. And people were suspicious when it started to come back in favor, you know, doubting it. And then it went on a 7-year run. The point is that's how this works, is every year has difficulties. Ian and I, we could sit here and name many years. It's not all easy. And this is what we do. Here, what is it we do? We define where leadership is. We detect change. And then we recommend that we move the asset allocation in favor of where that leadership is. So that's kind of a constant job. Sometimes the market trends so well that you kind of go to sleep with it for a few years, mm-hmm. because nothing changes. And I think that's what we've come from into a change here, which has gone on. We've documented it and written about it extensively over the many weeks here. A change here that still requires our attention to follow that change and make the underlying changes in the allocation. And then be ready for other things. Like, for example, wasn't really the focus of this call today, but non-US is pretty out of favor compared to the US. That's not always going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
There are bright spots in the non-US now. The headcount of those bright spots is very, very thin. But the non-US will fire up and present opportunity.
Yeah.
And so will other asset classes. So I think it's a game where we're on top or need to be on top of that on a daily, weekly, quarterly basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we'll continue to keep those listening. I mean, up to date, whether it's through these podcasts, through these media. I mean, like Steve said, there's a lot of other asset classes we could touch on. So we'll be sure to continue to do that through these media posts, as well as through the daily report that comes out there through our that website platform there. And then do want to throw in a little bit of a shout out as well for those that don't necessarily want to listen to us virtually or don't read about us virtually. If you want to come meet us in person and talk about some of these things and hear some of the stuff that we see going on, we are going to be putting on a in-person spring symposium in Las Vegas at the end of May, May 19th and 20th, which both Steve and I will be there. So I know Steve has big following there that always likes to come and hear what he has to say, as we do on the podcast. So for those that are interested in learning more information about that, you're more than welcome to. We have a lot of different signup links on the platform. You might have seen some emails going around if you follow any of the content there, but you can always reach out to us at dwa@dorseywright.com or at 804-320-8511. So with that, Steve, I mean, I think that runs through most of what we were looking to cover this afternoon. It was great to have you on here. Great to see you in person again.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And we'll look forward to having you all join us again next week.